So you're welcome to come in the afternoon. And this lecture this morning, it's very much part of this afternoon colloquium, but with details. So if you you can take it also the introduction what happened this afternoon. So this is lecture 3. And the first one I computed the eigenvalues of iron volume. The second one, just a general description of quantum gravity. And I ended up by saying that the main problem, main conceptual problem one clashes against is the funny way in which times come in general relativity, which becomes even more funny when you do quantum general relativity. So one has to find a general way of doing physics where time is treated in a way that then is compatible with GR, compatible with quantum mechanics. And this is what I'm going to do today. So it's the title could be Physics Without Time, where, well, without, you will understand exactly what it means in the course of the lecture. So it would be three steps. First, I want to define an object, which is a Hamilton function. I don't know how much you know about it. I'll just repeat basic stuff about the Hamilton function, which will be a main tool for everything. And the second step will be to sort of from there go to a general description of physics without time. And the third step, just some examples and going back to the Hamilton function. So Hamilton function. And this is very pretty stuff. In fact, it's simple, it's classical, nothing particularly. But I think behind that, there's something deep about the structure of mechanics and the world. So imagine we have a system described by some configuration variable, Q. Q is not necessarily one-dimensional. For a particle, would be three components, would be the position x. So it's in some possibly high-dimensional space C, which is configuration space. And this variable evolves in time. So the entire story of mechanics is that there's time, t, the real variable. And what we're interested in is the function q of t, okay? The evolution of the system in time. That's what mechanics is all about. So at the end of the lecture, I want to tell you that this is not what mechanics is all about, okay? That's arrival point. So how do we describe evolution? Well, we can give the equation of motion. More cleanly, we can give just one function, which is Lagrangian, which is a function of two variables, two possibly multidimensional variables, q and q dot, the time derivative of that. And then the motions, the physical motions, are the ones that minimize the action, which is the integral in dt of the Lagrangian of q of t, q prime of t, because you need a function of t, from some initial time tai I to some final time tai f. So this is a functional of a function which gives the evolution. So it's a functional of q, that's why I put square brackets. So if you want, let me use a mathematical notation which would be horrible to mathematicians, is a functional of q of t, okay? Which I mean is a function of the entire function q of t. All right, so this is standard. So this is q, this is t, so time goes up in this picture. We have some initial point at some time t initial, The system is the configuration Q initial, and then it evolves, and it arrives at some times T final, in some point Q final. Okay, so this is Q initial T initial, this is Q final T final. Now, let me define the following object. Let me define one particular solution, Q, so one particular motion, Q labeled by Q initial, T final, function of T, okay, as that particular motion that starts in the point Q initial and ends at the point Q final, T final, and is a solution of the equation of motion. So this is defined first by being a solution of the equation of motion, and second, by the fact that this function Q of the initial, T final, as writing, let me write dot, 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 at time T initial is Q initial, and at time T final is Q final. So given four numbers, this thing here is a trajectory in that is a motion. Okay? And now I can define the Hamilton function. The Hamilton function that goes slowly because this will be an object we'll use all over the course. The Hamilton function is a function of four variables, Q initial, Q final, and T final. Okay, defined as the value of the action on this particular trajectory here. So defining the integral from T initial to T final, dt of L of Q initial, T final of T, Q dot, Q initial, T final of T. Okay, that's the Hamilton function. That's an object which it's immensely useful for doing physics, classical physics, quantum physics, and quantum gravity in particular. The reason being that a lot of that structure does not survive for general relativity, but the Hamilton function does. And a lot of that structure does not survive in quantum theory, but the Hamilton function does. I'll use sometimes... Instead of writing Q initial, T initial, Q final, T final, which is horrendously long, I'll write as Q T, Q prime, T prime. So it's just the Hamilton function is just a function of Q T, Q prime, T prime, and it's defined this way here.
So is the different name for Hamilton function the classical action?
Oh, okay, good. Thanks for this question because do not confuse. Thanks for the question. Do not confuse the action and the Hamilton function. The action is a functional of a motion. So the action is something which you give a motion and it gives you a number. The Hamilton function is something completely different. It's a function of four numbers. So you give four numbers and it produces a number. Okay? Of course, the two are related by this equation here. So if you want, the Hamilton function is the action of that particular trajectory determined by this boundary here. So in a sense, it's much more rich as an object and is much more simple as a mathematical object. It's just a function of two variables. The action is not a function of two variables. It's a function of the trajectory. It's a function of the proof. Maybe I can compute one so you see exactly how it goes. Let me compute one. that's the simplest case for a free particle. Okay? So for a free particle, what is the action? The action is the integral in dt of 1/2 mv squared. Okay? So just the kinetic energy, no potential energy. So that's the action. From the initial point to the final point. What is the Hamilton function? Well, let us give two. So qt, q prime, t prime. What is the solution of the equation of motion where you know is a free particle goes straight? OK, with a velocity, q, which obviously is q prime minus q over t prime minus t, because it's constant. The velocity remains constant for a free particle. So what is a Hamilton function? It's a function of q, t, q prime, t prime, given by the value of that on the particular solution. So let me compute it. It's the integral, this integral here, dt, from t initial to t final, 1/2 m. Q is that on the solution. So it's q final. Is q prime minus q over t prime minus t squared. This is constant because this is the integration variable. That's why. So this is t final minus t initial. This is the integration variable. So this is constant, come out. And the integral is just t final minus t initial. So the result is m q prime minus q squared over 2 t prime minus t. Okay? So this object here is a Hamilton function of a free particle. Okay? You can easily compute the Hamilton function of a harmonic oscillator. You can easily compute, this is in my book, or you can compute it yourself as an exercise. You can easily compute the Hamilton function of any system where you can solve the equation of motion. For a system you cannot solve the equation of motion, the Hamilton function is hard to compute. It's fact. You'll see why in a moment. Good. So what does one do with this object? It has some properties, and that's are the key things. First property, so properties. First one, the derivative of the, so it's the four variables, right? Qt, q prime, t prime. So what happens if I take the derivative of s with respect to q is minus p, the momentum. What is the momentum? The momentum p general is dl over dq dot, right? As a function, as a function of q and q dot. So free particle is mv, of course. And the derivative with respect q prime, the final point, is plus the momentum. Let me prove this, because this is something sort of crucial. So let me give you a proof of this relation here. The easiest way to prove it is to remember the definition. So this is the trajectory. Determined by qt, q prime, t prime, and you want to know what happens if you vary q or q prime, for instance. Suppose I vary both. So I don't vary t, so t remains the same. I move here, I vary q, and I vary q prime. So there would be a new, instead of q of t, determined by four numbers, there would be q of t plus delta q of t. When I vary that. So the variation of the Hamilton function is going to be the variation of its definition. T and T prime does not change because I'm not varying the initial point to the final point, dt, and I vary what is inside. So I vary delta of the Lagrangian. And delta of the Lagrangian is the integral T T prime dt, is the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to dq, dq plus the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to dq dot, delta q dot, the variation of delta q dot. Now, what is delta q dot? Delta q dot is the variation of the time derivative, which since it's first order things, time derivative variation change is the time derivative of the variation.
Question? I'm a little bit confused. You say that the endpoints don't move?
Yeah, I'm varying.
On this picture, I think the endpoints are moved.
The t and t prime don't change, and the q changes. So this is a delta q, and that's delta q prime.
So you're varying the endpoints, but not the...
Sorry, don't move in time.
Okay.
I want the variation s. S is a function of q, t, q prime, t prime. I want to know the derivative with respect to this and that, of course, at t and t prime fix. So the endpoint changes in position, not in time. The endpoint of the integration. So delta q dot is the time derivative of delta q. So I have a time derivative here, which I can integrate by parts and put it here, okay, plus the boundary term. So what do I get? I get the integral for tt prime dt dl dq delta q plus the time derivative of that, plus d over dt, dl over dq dot, all that delta q, plus the boundary term. And the boundary term is the time derivative of all this. But the integral of the time derivative is the variation. So plus the variation from the initial to the final time of dl over dq dot delta q. These are the Euler-Lagrange equation. And since the q was a solution of the equation of motion, by definition, this is zero. So what remains is that dl over dq is p. So what remains is the p in the final point p final delta q final minus p initial delta q initial. So therefore, the derivative of s with respect to delta q initial is p initial, and the derivative of s with respect to delta q final is p, of course, in the final point. Let me put a prime here. So this is the derivative in the point, in the final point. This is momentum in the final point, momentum initial. Okay? Now, so what? So, because of this equation here, so second property, if I know the Hamilton function, then I know the general solution of the equation of motion. So this is a function that knows the solution of everything. Why? Well, just look at that. Look at this equation here. Let me write it more precisely. Ds over dq is minus p, which is it turns out to be a function. P here is going to be a function of qt, q prime, and t prime. So I get the momentum as a function of q, t, q prime, and t prime. So the momentum is a function of that, the minus. So I compute this, so even I have explicitly this function. Now, if I have this function, I just can take, solve with respect to q prime, just invert it. And I get q prime as a function of what? Of q, p, t, and t prime. So I get the position at time t prime as a function of initial position and momentum in time. And that's the solution of the equation of motion. When Hamilton did that in the 19th century, is a small short paper in which he does that, and he described his function with these words, which are very pretty. He says that Mr. Lagrange function, wrote Lagrangian, defines the dynamics. Mr. Hamilton function, because he talks about himself in the third person, the 19th century. So Mr. Lagrange function defines the dynamics. Mr. Hamilton function solves the dynamics, right? Which is true. I mean, if you know the Hamilton function of a system, just one function has all the equation of solution equation of motion you need. Of course, it's not easy to compute it. To compute it, in a sense, you have to already know the solution of the equation. Now, we're not yet at the building. Third property. Well, the function of Q and T, the derivative with respect to Q is momentum. What about the derivative with respect to T? Okay. What is ds over dt and ds over t prime? Any guess?
Minus the
energy. The energy, exactly. This is going to be the energy, and this is going to be minus the energy, where you see the sign are flipped. So here is momentum and the energy, minus the momentum and the energy is the momentum and minus the energy. Let me prove this. Now we are taking a variation, let me just look at the derivative with respect to t prime. So I'm moving this point here now. So this is delta t prime. Okay. So I want the varied action. The varied Hamilton function is going to be the variation of the integral from t to t prime dt l. And now look, q was only inside the Lagrangian, but t is also here. It's also in the boundary of the integration. So when I vary t, I also have to remember to vary this boundary here. So this will be two terms, one term which is a variation here, one term which is a variation here. So let me write them separately. The term with a variation here is easy, because if you have an integral and you vary the limit of integration, you just get the integrand. So you get L, that's easy, delta T. Okay. And what is it here? This is the change in going from of this integral in going from here to here. Right? You move the integral a little bit. So you have to add this one. This is a delta q. And what is the delta q? This is a delta q at the final point corresponding to delta t. But of course, since q is vt, this is going to be minus the velocity, so minus q dot delta t. So here we get minus ds over dq, q dot delta t.
Is delta t with delta t times?
It's the same delta t here. It's the delta t that I'm varying. The of how much I'm moving the final point.
But the final point is t prime. The final point is t prime.
Thank you. Yeah, and this is a delta q prime. And that's q prime. So this is p prime, q dot prime, minus l, with an overall minus delta t. But that's a definition of the Hamiltonian, which is the energy. So delta S over delta T is the energy. And that's too. Let's since since this is very abstract, I saw you. Looks strange, but let me just do it for real. Okay? So let's take that. The Hamilton function of a free particle is n. Let's write q final minus q initial scalar square divided by 2 t prime minus t final minus 2 initial. Okay? So I want the derivative with respect to q final. Ds over dq final. So square, so I get 2 that comes down, and q final over q initial, n, and then q final minus q initial divided by t final minus 2 initial, which is the velocity, mv. So the momentum is mv, mq dot. Okay? Prime, but in that case, they're the same. If I took the derivative with respect to q initial, there would be a minus, because it's a minus here. Okay. What about the other one? Ds with respect to dt. Let's do dt final. It's easier. So is the derivative with respect to something downstairs, so it's minus m over 2. And then this square, so qf minus qi square divided by tf minus ti square is v square. 1/2 mv square is the energy. Okay. So this Hamilton function is magic; knows everything. Just take derivative, and you have the momentum, the energy, the solution, the equation of motion, everything. Okay. So in general, this can be written for all any system. And now, final observation about the Hamilton function. Wow, time flies. Final observation about the Hamilton function. Look, in a sense, if you could think of the system you're describing, just give that, you would know everything, right? So we'll give all the dynamics. You could compute everything out of that. You can compute the solution, equation of motion. You can, if you know that, you can make all possible predictions about the dynamics of the system. Look how q and t comes symmetrically here. Independent of how we have got there, q and t here seems on the same ground. It seems that there's q and t and sort of its momentum, which is p and minus the energy, which are conjugate one to the other, right? The momentum is as I said, the gradient of that. So the gradient of S, if I take derivative with respect to these two variables, I get the momentum. That's general. So this generalized momentum, P and E, is the gradient of the Hamilton function. So one is tempted to take this seriously and see if there is a version. Is there a version of the formalism where q and t are treated equally? And that is what I'm going to next, what I'm going to do next. So I'm going to write down a version of mechanics where instead of evolving q and t, you treat q and t as if they were brothers. Exactly. You mix t with the other variables. And this will be essential for doing GR. So second part, can I write here, or is it inconvenient for you if you write here? The people down there, can you see here? So second part, which I'm not going to finish today, let me call it general covariant. form of mechanics. Or general relativistic form of mechanics. Now, you have questions about that first? Is that all clear about the Heim's assertion? Suppose you have a system, QQ dot, and let me just simplify a little bit. Let me say that is there's a kinetic energy minus potential energy. So it's just for not being too general. It could be done more in general. Then, of course, you know the action, you know the equation of motion, you know, the equation of motion, d over dt, m q dot is equal minus dv over dq, f equal ma, and so on. Now, keep this in mind, and consider a different system, a new Lagrangian, for the variables qi, q1, and q0, so two variables, evolving in some parameter tau. And write the following Lagrangian, function of q1, q0, q1 derivative with respect to tau, q0 derivative with respect to tau, okay? Define as follows, 1 half n q1 square dot over q0 dot minus q0 dot v of q1. So this is a system with two variables instead of one, q1 and q0 instead of q, and with this other action here, with the other Lagrangian here. What are the equation of motion that follows from that? Let's write the equation of motion. There's an equation of motion for q1 and an equation of motion for q0. The one for q1 is d over d tau, Euler-Lagrange equation, the derivative of this with respect to q1 dot. So m q1 dot over q0 dot. Minus q0 dot, the derivative of this with respect to q1 equals 0. Now, q1 dot over q0 dot is dq1 over dq0, right? Just so, and this is dq0 over d tau. So let me multiply by the opposite of that. I have d tau over dq0 of d over d tau m dq0 dq1 over dq0 minus dv over dq1 is 0. But this is exactly this equation here. If I identify q1 with q and q0 with t, it's exactly that equation. But what about the other one? There's another equation here. Let's do the other equation. So the Euler-Lagrange of this with respect to q0, q0 there is only the derivative. There is only the derivative, so there's only d over d tau term. Derivative of that with respect to q0 is 1 half m minus q dot 1 square over q dot 0 square minus v of q. But that's minus the energy. So this equation is telling me that the energy is conserved. The energy is conserved if that equation is satisfied. So this equation is not independent of this equation here. It's just the same written another way. So this is a redundant system. These are two equations, but one is useless, doesn't do anything. So it means that there's some gauge, there's some redundancy, there's some gauge in this Lagrangian here. And finally, the entire system is exactly equivalent to that. So what I've done, I've rewritten the system here in a way where instead of having one variable, I have two variables, but it's completely equivalent to before. And I've replaced the independent variable t, the evolution parameter, with a something which looks exactly like q. Yes?
So this whole discussion only works for time-independent potentials, right? What happens if you have changing magnetic field or something like that? At the level where you don't treat magnetic field as interactions of particles.
I don't know. And it's not very interesting because the point is that the fundamental systems in physics that we have, they come in this form here. Okay? So of course there could be other systems that you can imagine, not fundamental, like something interacting with an external magnetic field that cannot be put in this form. But what is interesting is that all the ones that we have can be put in this form. Now, this is for the physical part. For the mathematical part, I think this can be extended if this dependent t, nothing really changes. Then this you just have q0, something that depends on q0 here. And this equation becomes a little bit more complicated. So you get not energy conservation, but you have the correct energy variation given by the fact you have an external force time dependent. So I think that everything goes through, but I'm not completely sure, so I don't want to. So what is the message? The message is that any system can be rewritten, at least any system with energies conserved, can be rewritten in a way in which you add one variable, which is time, okay? You treat this as an independent variable, and instead of describing the evolution q as a function of t, you describe the evolution q as a function of tau and t as a function of tau. In other words, in this QT picture, which you go from here to here, instead of giving this line as a function, Q as a function of time, you choose a parameter here, and you give a parameterized form of the line. Right? Describe the line. Now, I said that there is a gauge here. What is a gauge? Well, the gauge is very easy. The gauge is the arbitrary choice of this parameter. In fact, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to bore you too much, but this system of equation of motion and the action in terms of this Lagrangian is invariant under the transformation, so the gauge. If you take q of tau, q1 of tau, and q0 of tau, and you replace this with q1 of tau prime of tau, where this is an arbitrary function of tau, and q0 tau prime of tau, monotonic, then the action is invariant. So in other words, the parameter tau is completely irrelevant in this game, is gauge, is pure gauge, and the physics is not in the specific function of q of tau and t of tau, but in the relation between q and t given by the two functions together. Good. So what happens if
question. If you perform the genre transformation from this setting, will you get a first class constraint?
That's right. Okay. That's right. I don't know if you want to do it today or tomorrow. If you do a Lagrangian transformation, you find a Hamiltonian which is zero, and you find a first class constraint corresponding to that gauge. And I can anticipate, so the Hamiltonian is going to be zero, and the first class constraint is going to be Pt minus the Hamiltonian of this system. Let me call H0 the Hamiltonian of this system. P and Q is zero. Now,
will that be Pt times something?
Sorry?
But is P the momentum or?
P is the momentum conjugate to T.
Are the units correct in this?
Sorry?
Are the units correct in this equation?
Yes, because this is an energy. It's going to be an energy. The momentum conjugate to time is going to be an energy like that.
Okay.
So this is energy, energy. Now, if you think that this is artificial, it's not. You've seen it already. For instance, it's natural to use that when you go to special relativity and you treat a particle, right? You've seen the action of a relativistic particle. This is the action of a relativistic particle. We are exacting this framework here. Why? Because here you have four variables. X0, X1, X2, and X3, special relativity. But the system doesn't have 4 degrees of freedom, it has 3 degrees of freedom. So we're just fakely treating the fourth degrees of freedom, the time, as if it was a fourth degree of freedom, exactly like here. And this action is invariant under the perturbation of tau, right? It's a length in Minkowski space of this curve, arbitrary parameterized, this is not proper length. And if you compute the Hamiltonian of this, you get zero. And there's a constraint, which is not of that form, because it's almost of that form. So let me do it with the constraint. So P mu is dl over dx dot mu. So the derivative of that with respect to x dot mu, which is, I have 1/2 for the, which is this notation here. This means the square root. A 2 here, and then a 2 goes away with that. It's mu. N. So the Hamiltonian is P mu x dot mu minus L. Is immediately zero. Because if you multiply p mu by x dot mu, you get x dot mu square, the square of the length divided by the length, which is exactly this times n, minus itself, this is zero. So the Hamiltonian is zero. And there is a constraint, because if you take p mu, if you multiply by p mu, you get x mu dot, which is the square of that, divided by the square of that, 1 m squared. So the constraint is p squared minus m squared. This is nothing. It's not proper time. This is an arbitrary parameter along the trajectory. There are four variables, of which three are the position and one is time. Now, what about general relativity, which after all is our concern? General relativity, you have the action is the integral of d4x, the square root of minus the determinant of g, at the Ricci scalar of g. But all the Lagrangian here, all the action here, is invariant under arbitrary parameterization of x mu. So this x mu is exactly like this tau parameter here, or this tau parameter here. This is an arbitrary parameterization which has no physical meaning into itself. The physics is in the relation between Q1 and Q0. The physics here is in a relation between X and X0. But Q1 and Q0 are treated on the same ground. X0 and X vector here are treated on the same ground. The physics here is not in the way G mu nu depend on X, which is completely arbitrary, but in the relation between the component of G themselves. Okay? Where is the difference between this, that, and that? Here, you still recognize where is the time variable because of this PT, which is linear. So you say, OK, Q0 is the time. Here, you can still recognize where is the time variable. You say, oh, X0, but a bit less, because in fact, if you do a Lorentz transformation, any X0 can be work as time. You can choose any Lorentz time to transform this into a system evolving in time. Here, among the component of the metric itself, there isn't anyone which is naturally the time. What has changed? Nothing. It's just that if you go from the idea that physics, mechanics, is evolution in time to the idea that mechanics is relative evolution of variables, you realize that this is possible and this is necessary when you get to general relativity. You don't need to think about one particular variable to be the independent one and the other evolve with respect to it. You just have a bunch of variables evolving together. And that's what that's what mechanics is telling you. Mechanics doesn't need to privilege one variable as an independent one. Here, Q and T are treated on the same ground. And so here, X0 and X. Here, all the components of the metric tensor are treated on the same ground. There's no need to distinguish the independent one to be the time. In general relativity, you can just forget the problem of saying, well, which one is my time variable? Forget about it and just treat the theory as a formalism that gives the relative evolution of the variables. Now, the independent variables, Q1 and Q0, all together, are called partial observables. Just to give a name to them. So position and time together are partial observables. Physics about the relative evolution of partial observables. Final comment. And so it's going to wrap up everything. What is the Hamilton function of a system, of a general covariance system? So let me take that system. So let's say that the Lagrangian, let me use Q and T, is this one. So the Lagrangian, say, is 1 half m q dot square over t dot minus t dot v of q. Now we can call it t. Just know that it's one variable like any other one. And I want to write the Hamilton function. So the Hamilton function is going to be a function of q, t, and tau, the initial time, q prime, t prime, and tau prime. It's going to be the integral from tau prime, from tau to tau prime, d tau, of this thing here, of 1 half m q dot square over t dot minus t dot v of q. Okay? But look, this is invariant under arbitrary optimization of tau. So I can change my integration variable as I want, and this keeps its form. Right? That's the point. And in fact, you see it explicitly, because if you you can try to make a change of variable, and you see that both here and here, this full thing transforms as a density in tau. So if I want to compute this to have this value, I can just choose any gauge I want. I can just choose t prime as I want. So I can choose t equal t prime, t equal tau if I want, t of tau equal tau. I can choose as independent parameter t itself, obviously. So in other words, I can make a change of variable here from tau to t, and I take out this t prime. I put t prime here, and this is dt over d tau. So this is going to be the integral dt from t initial to t final, t to t prime, of 1 half m dq over dt square minus, this has gone out, v of q. But this is a previous Hamilton function. And this is equal s of q, t, q prime, and t prime. And what about t prime, tau, and tau prime? They are not here. So ds over d tau is 0. The Hamilton function of a system, general covariant, does not depend on the independent evolution parameter. It only depends on the partial observables, which means that the Hamilton function is something whose meaning is well defined both for systems which evolve in time and for systems which are generally covariant. And it is the same object in both cases, if you use one formula or the other. So for a free particle, for a particle, you just compute it and you get the same function of initial and final position and time as before. For a general covariant system like general relativity, you get something which only depends on the metric up to coordinate transformations. So the Hamilton function of general relativity, which will consider later on, I'm not going to here, is going to be a fully general covariant object. If you do the Hamiltonian analysis of general relativity, it looks strange. There is no Hamiltonian, there are only constraints. But if you first realize that that there is a generalized formulation of mechanics in this general covariant form is where any system can be put in a form in which there is no the Hamiltonian is zero, there is only constraint, and there is general covariance, then you realize that generativity is nothing strange. What is strange is generativity. Is that unlikely these sort of promoted up systems, the mechanical theory doesn't tell you which one of the variables is time. So once you go to the mechanics of generativity, you have a set of variables, which are the component of the metric, and the dynamics is the relative evolution of these variables without any one being more time than the other. The t in the coordinates is nothing at all. It has no physical meaning and is not physical time. Okay? Stop here. Or take questions if you're ready. You look tired. Was it too easy or too hard? This is, we're not yet in quantum gravity, right? Yeah. But unless one gets this clear, then quantum gravity is completely incoherent, obviously. Now, in order to go to do quantum gravity, one has to sort of get out from some common assumptions about the universe, like there is a time and things evolve in time.
So if before x is completely irrelevant physically.
That's right.
And does this mean that positions in general relativity are completely irrelevant?
That's right. You have to define position in a much more complicated way. But sort of obvious, right? In special relativity, what it means, suppose the origin is there, what it means that I am at position x? It means that there's a physical special relativity. There's a physical distance x 5 meters from the wall. Right? That's what. What it means that my coordinate is x in general relativity? Nothing. What is meaningful is to say that the physical distance for the wall is 5 meters, but the physical distance in general relativity is the integral of the square root of g mu nu x dot mu along a line that goes from me to the wall. Okay? So it depends explicitly on the variable. The position is something which is given by the special relativistic position is something that in general relativity corresponds to a function of the metric.
So I mean, general relativity has lots of pitch freedom.
That's right.
I mean, like really, you have only two degrees of freedom, physically relevant.
That's right.
If you fix all the degrees of freedom and you just if you fix all the gauge and you end up with 2 degrees of freedom. Does this make the positions
yes, physical? Yes, it does. But you end up with a theory which, away from just near Minkowski space, is completely untreatable, non-local, horrible. And it's like Yang-Mills theory. Like, if you fix completely the gauge, then you have a theory without gauge. But you have a highly non-local theory, which is... So you don't get clarity by getting rid of gauge invariance. You confuse yourself. But in principle, yes. In principle, you can rewrite Yang-Mills theory in terms of completely gauge invariant observables, and rewrite general relativity, completely gauge fixing everything. And so,
I mean, in principle, you want all the observables to be gauge invariant, right? Or not? If the observables are not gauge invariant, then they're not physically.
Yes, this is what you say is correct, but it has to be said very precisely and carefully for not falling into a trap, because it leads to a trap if one doesn't think carefully about that. Let me use names. That's why I call partial observables these quantities here. Q and T individually are partial observables. So what does it mean that, so they're not observable? What does it mean that T is not observable, Q is not observable? It means precisely, that's what, if you read Dirac and his discussion of observables from which this comes about, it means that if you have the initial data, if you know the solution of the equation proportion, you know in which state you are, then the observables are the thing you can predict. So you can predict Q at some time T. You can never predict T, obviously. No, you can predict Q unless I give you time T. So in that sense, T alone and Q alone are not observable. Okay? What is observable is Q at some time T. So in this predictivity sense of observables, Q and T are not observable. But there is a weaker sense of observability, which has nothing to do with predictivity, which is, do I have a machine that gives me the time? Yes, there it is. Do I have a machine that gives me the position? Yes, I mean, just measure something. So I can observe, in the sense of measure, quantities which are not predictable by the theory. And this is a triviality, because the quintessence of that is time. Right? In standard classical mechanics, time is what? Is it observable or not? No, it's not. Oh, okay, so you cannot never know what time is it. Yes, of course you can know what time is it. You just look at the clock. Okay? So it's observable in a weaker sense. So there's two senses of the world observables. There's a partial observables, which are things you can measure, and there's observable in the sense of Dirac, to which you're referring, is a thing you can predict. So Q Q by itself, T by itself, a component of the metric by itself are observable, okay, but they're not predictable. What is predictable, what the theory predicts, is relations between these, is Q at time T. One thing is a function of the other one.
Because my question is related to something that's skipping way ahead, which is that, or maybe to the first lecture, the volume and area operators are not Bayesian invariants.
They are partial observables.
Yeah, so I know there was a discussion paper, I think, by Bianca Dittrich, that it's non-obvious that if you have a gauge invariant observable and you fix the gauge, that it still has to have a discrete spectrum.
Could you speak up?
There is this problem that if you have a gauge invariant observable and you fix the gauge, and it had a discrete spectrum before fixing the gauge, after fixing the gauge, it might turn out to have a continuous spectrum.
Because it might be something else that you measure. I mean, if the gauge fixed the thing is not, I mean, what you can measure partial observable. That's what I'm insisting. I mean, in theory, in physics, you do measure partial observables. In quantum mechanics, here we're in classical mechanics, you're going ahead to quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics, as I said, is two things. Is amplitude that gives the probability of how things evolve, and the discretization. So when we take standard quantum mechanics written in the time, and we promote it to general covariant quantum mechanics, then the question is, the discretization refers to partial observables or the complete observables? And the discretization refers to the partial observable, not to the complete observable. The discretization has nothing to do with time evolution. For instance, if you have a particle in a box, its momentum is quantized and you can compute the... If you put a potential in the box, then the momentum is not conserved. So the momentum becomes one of these partial observables here. It doesn't mean anything in terms of Dirac observables. It's not the gauge invariant thing if you use this language here. But the momentum remains quantized exactly as before. The angular momentum is quantized irrespectively of the dynamics of the system. So what is quantized are the partial observables. The theory, quantum mechanics, these are predictions about the discretization of partial observables, not only of Dirac observables. So a different question is, all right, so but what the theory predicts in terms of the evolution are Dirac observables, do they are quantized as well? Well, that you have to work into. We don't know. But as the theory is formulated, you can measure T, you can measure Q, you can measure components of the metric, you can measure a distance, an area, and if the theory is correct, we don't know, if the theory is correct, then the area is going to be quantized. There was a question down there.
I have a question. The number of Dirac observables somehow depend on the degrees of freedom.
That's right.
Of the theory. But because of all these gauge invariants, how do we really know that we have a Dirac observable of GR, for example?
The number of degrees of
First we have to find a way to count, and then we have to find the observables as functions on phase or.
We don't need to find the Dirac observables. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow. The numbers should work, right? The number, if you have a covariant formulation of a system, you have many partial observable, okay? But the number of degrees of freedom is less. And is the number of partial observable minus the number of constraints. Mm-hmm. Right? Here, you get one constraint that kills the fact that you have added one thing, you've introduced this tau.
Yeah.
Okay. In general, and here the counting is the same for the relativistic particle. In general relativity, you can write the constraints, so the number of degrees of freedom is going to be the number of your partial observables divided minus all the constraints. Of course, now it's going to be a field theory, so the calculation is more delicate, but it works very well, and you get down to 2 per space point, which is the number of degrees of freedom of GR, which you can get in many different many, many alternative madness. So the counting works. Just do the Hamiltonian analysis and you count how many constraints you have. And the number of degrees of freedom is the number of variables minus the number of constraints. I'm going to argue that if you work in the Hamiltonian framework, then the only way to make to compute transition amplitudes is to go all the way to the Dirac observables. But if you work with a path integral, what you really want is transition amplitudes between partial observables. This is tomorrow's lecture. So tomorrow we'll go from that to the same story, but in the quantum theory. And we'll see that the bridge is the Hamilton function. Okay? So thanks a lot. And see you tomorrow or this afternoon.